Chapter 58. Oh, how history repeats itself. The trash can man was once again being broiled alive in the devil's frying pan. But this time there was no hope of Cibola's cooling fountains to sustain him. It's what I deserve, no more than what I deserve. His skin had burned, peeled again, and finally it had not tanned but blackened. He was walking proof that a man finally takes on the look of what he is. Trash looked as if someone had doused him in No. 2 kerosene and struck a match to him. The blue of his eyes had faded in the constant desert glare, and looking into them was like looking into weird extra-dimensional holes in space. He was dressed in a strange imitation of the dark man, an open-throated red-checked shirt, faded jeans, and desert boots that were already scratched and mashed and folded and sprung. But he had thrown away his red flawed amulet. He didn't deserve to wear it. He had proved unworthy. He paused in the broiling sun and passed a thin and shaking hand across his brow. He had been meant for this place and time. All his life had been a preparation. He had passed through the burning corridors of hell to get here. He had endured the father-killing sheriff. He had endured that place at Terre Haute. He had endured Carly Yates. After all his strange and lonely life, he had found friends. Lloyd, Ken, Whitney Horgan. And, ah, God, he had fucked it all up. He deserved to burn out here in the devil's frying pan. Could there be redemption for him? The dark man might know. Trash can man did not. He could barely remember now what had happened, perhaps because his tortured mind did not want to remember. He had been in the desert for over a week before his last disastrous return to Indian Springs. A scorpion had stung him on the middle finger of his left hand, his fuck finger, that long-ago Carly Yates and that long-ago Poutonville would have called it with unfailing pool hall vulgarity. And that hand had swelled up like a rubber glove filled with water. An unearthly fire had filled his head. And yet he had pushed on. He had finally returned to Indian Springs, still feeling like a figment of someone else's imagination. There had been some good-natured talk as the men examined his finds, incendiary fuses, contact landmines, small stuff, really. Trash had begun to feel good for the first time since the scorpion had stung him. And then, with no warning at all, time had sideslipped, and he was back in Poutonville. Someone had said, "People who play with fire wet the bed, Trash," and he had looked up, expecting to see Billy Jameson, but it hadn't been Bill, it was Rich Groudmore from Poutonville, grinning and picking his teeth with a match, his fingers black with grease because he'd strolled up to the pool hall from the Texaco on the corner to have a game of nine-ball on his break. And someone else said, "You better put that away, Richie, Trash is back in town." And that sounded like Steve Tobin at first, but it wasn't Steve. It was Carly Yates in his old scuffed and hoodie motorcycle jacket. With growing horror, he had seen they were all there, unquiet corpses come back to life. Richie Groudmore and Carly and Norm Morissette and Hatch Cunningham, the one who was getting bald even though he was only 18, and all of the others called him Hatch Cunnilingus. And they were leering at him. It came thick and fast then, through a fever haze of the years. "Hey, Trash, why didn't you torch the school? Hey, Trashy, you burned your pork off yet? Hey, Trash Can Man, I heard you snort Ronson lighter fluid, that true?" Then Carly Yates. "Hey, Trash, what did old Lady Semple say when you torched her pension check?" He tried to scream at them, but all that had come out was a whisper. "Don't ask me about old Lady Semple's pension check no more." And he ran. The rest of it was a dream. Getting the incendiary fuses and slapping them on the trucks in the motor pool. His hands had done their own work, his mind far away. In Terre Haute they had made him bite on a rubber thing when they gave him the shocks, and the man at the controls sometimes looked like the father-killing sheriff, and sometimes like Carly Yates, and sometimes like Hatch Cunnilingus. And he always swore hysterically to himself that this time he wouldn't piss himself. And he always did. When the trucks were fixed, he had gone into the nearest hangar and had fixed the choppers in there. He had wanted timer fuses to do that job right, and so he had gone into the mess hall kitchen and had found over a dozen of those five-and-dime plastic timers. You set them for 15 minutes or half an hour, and when they got back to zero, they went ding, and you knew it was time to take your pie out of the oven. Only instead of going ding this time, Trash had thought, They were going to go bang. He liked that. That was pretty good. If Carly Yates or Rich Groudmore tried to take one of those copters up, they were going to get a big fat surprise. He had simply hooked the timers up to the copter ignition systems. When it was done, a moment of sanity had come back. A moment of choice. He had stared around at the helicopters parked in the echoing hangar, and then down at his hands. They smelled like a roll of burned caps. This was not Powhatanville. There were no helicopters in Powhatanville. The Indiana sun did not shine with the savage brilliance of this sun. He was in Nevada. Carly and his pool hall buddies were dead. Dead of the superflu. Trash had looked doubtfully at his handiwork. What was he doing, sabotaging the dark man's equipment? It was senseless. Insane. He would undo it, and quickly. Oh, but the lovely explosions. The lovely fires. Flaming jet fuel streaming everywhere. Helicopters exploding out of the air. So beautiful. And he had suddenly thrown his new life away. He had trotted back to his sand crawler, a furtive grin on his sun-blackened face. He had gotten in and had driven away, but not too far away. He had waited, and finally a fuel truck had come out of the motor pool garage and had trundled across the tarmac like a large olive-drab beetle. And when it blew, exploding greasy fire in every direction, Trash had dropped his field glasses and had bellowed at the sky, shaking his fists in inarticulate joy. But the joy had not lasted long. It had been replaced by deadly terror and sick, mourning sorrow. He had driven northwest into the desert, pushing the sand crawler along at near suicidal speeds. How long ago? He didn't know. If he had been told that this was the 16th of September, he would only have nodded in a total blank lack of understanding. He thought he would kill himself, that there was nothing else left for him, but he hadn't done it. He didn't know why. But some force, more powerful than the agony of his remorse and loneliness, had stopped him. It seemed that even burning himself to death like a Buddhist monk was not penance enough. He had slept. And when he awoke, he discovered that a new thought had crept into his brain as he slept, and that thought was redemption. Was it possible? He didn't know. But if he found something, something big, and brought it to the dark man in Las Vegas, might it not be possible? And even if redemption was still impossible, perhaps atonement was not. If it was true, there was still a chance he could die content. What? Not landmines or a fleet of flame tracks, not grenades or automatic weapons. None of those things were big enough. He knew where there were two large experimental bombers. They had been built without congressional knowledge, paid for out of blind defense funds. But he could not get them back to Vegas. Even if he could, there was no one there who could fly them. From the looks of them, they crewed at least 10, maybe more. He was like an infrared scope that senses heat and darkness and reveals those heat sources as vague red devil shapes. He was able, in some strange way, to sense the things that had been left out in this wasteland where so many military projects had been carried out. He could have gone straight west, straight to Project Blue, where the whole thing had begun. But cold plague was not to his taste, and in his confused but not entirely illogical way, he thought it would not be to Flag's taste either. Plague didn't care who it killed. So he had gone northwest from Indian Springs into the sandy desolation of the Nellis Air Force Range, stopping his crawler when he had to cut through high barbed wire fences marked with signs that read, U.S. government property, no trespassing, and armed sentries and guard dogs, and there is a high-voltage charge passing through these wires. But the electricity was dead, like the guard dogs and the armed sentries, and Trash Can Man drove on, correcting his course from time to time. He was being drawn to something. He didn't know what it was, but he thought it was big. Big enough. The crawler's Goodyear balloon tires rolled steadily on, carrying Trash through dry washes and up slopes so rocky that they looked like half-exposed stegosaurus spines. The air hung still and dry. The temperature hovered at just above 100 degrees. The only sound was the drone of the crawler's modified Studebaker engine. He topped a knoll, saw what was below, and threw the transmission into neutral for a moment. There was a huddled complex of buildings down there, shimmering through the rising heat like quicksilver. Quonset huts in low cinder block. Vehicles stalled here and there on the dusty streets. The whole area was surrounded by three courses of barbed wire, and he could see the porcelain conductors along the wire. These were not the small conductors, the size of a knuckle, that passed along a weak stay-away charge. These were the giant ones, the size of a closed fist. A paved two-lane road led to a guardhouse. No cute little signs here saying, "Check your camera with NP on duty," or "If you liked us, tell your congressman." The only sign in evidence was red on yellow, the colors of danger, curt and to the point. "Present identification immediately." "Thank you," Trashcan whispered. He had no idea who he was thanking. "Oh, thank you, thank you." His special sense had led him to this place, but he had known it was here all along, somewhere. He put the crawler in its forward gear and lurched down the slope. 10 minutes later, he was nosing up the access road to the guardhouse. There were black and white striped crash barriers across the road, and Trash got out to examine them. Places like this had big generators to make sure there was plenty of emergency power. He doubted if any generator would have gone on supplying power for 3 months, but he would still have to be very careful and make sure everything was blown before going in. What he wanted was now very near at hand. He wouldn't allow himself to become over-eager and get cooked like a roast in a microwave oven. Behind 6 inches of bulletproof glass, a mummy in an army uniform stared out and beyond him. Trash ducked under the crash barrier on the ingress side of the guardhouse and approached the door of the little concrete building. He tried it, and it opened. That was good. When a place like this had to switch over to emergency power, everything was supposed to lock automatically. If you were taking a crap, you got locked in the bathroom until the crisis was over. But if the emergency power failed, everything unlocked again. The dead sentry had a dry, sweet, interesting smell, like cinnamon and sugar mixed together for toast. He had not bloated or rotted. He had simply dried up. There were still black discolorations under his neck, the distinct trademark of Captain Trips. Standing in the corner behind him was a BAR. Trashcan Man took it and went back outside. He set the BAR for single fire, fiddled with the sight, and then socked it into the hollow of his scrawny right shoulder. He sighted down on one of the porcelain conductors and squeezed off a shot. There was a loud hand-clapping sound and an excited whiff of cordite. The conductor exploded every which way, but there was no purple-white glare of high-voltage electricity. Trashcan Man smiled. He went back to the sand crawler, put it in gear, and drove it through the crash barriers. They broke off with a snapping, grinding sound, and the crawler's big balloon tires rolled over them. The desert sun pounded down. Trashcan Man's peculiar eyes sparkled happily. He drove up the street to the first Quonset hut. It was a barracks. The shadowy interior was filled with that sugar and cinnamon smell. There were perhaps 20 soldiers scattered among the 50 or so beds. Trashcan Man walked up the aisle between them, wondering where he was going. There was nothing in here for him, was there? These men had once been weapons of a sort, but they had been neutralized by the flu. But there was something at the very rear of the building that interested him. A sign. He walked up to it and read. The heat in there was tremendous. It made his head thump and swell. But when he stood in front of the sign, he began to smile. Yes, it was here. Somewhere on this base was what he had been looking for. The sign showed a cartoon man in a cartoon shower. He was soaping his cartoon genitals busily. They were almost entirely covered with a drift of cartoon bubbles. The caption beneath read, "Remember, it is in your best interest to shower daily." Below that was a yellow and black emblem that showed 3 triangles pointed downward. The symbol for radiation. Trashcan Man laughed like a child and clapped his hands in the stillness.